How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, March 30th, 2020. It's been a long year, this March. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two lovely guests. They like to think of themselves as the dream team, and I like not to disabuse them of that notion. John Martellaro. Hi, John.
I'll reserve the word lovely for Charlotte. And meanwhile, good morning.
Also with me today, Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Dream team here, ready for action.
Outstanding. Now, John, I want to start with you. You wrote an interesting article on Friday in Particle Debris. Well, you wrote about an interesting article in Particle Debris about the new MacBook Air. Yeah.
I select my favorite article of the week in Particle Debris, or maybe two, and I pontificate about it. And in this case, it was Nali Patel. I think he's the managing editor of The Verge, who wrote a glorious, even-handed, thorough, in-depth, beautifully written, informative review of the new 2020 MacBook Air. It was terrific. And I started thinking about how this could be, you know, the perfect computer at home when you're working at home. You know, the MacBook Air has always been a bestseller on Apple's part. It's low cost and it's modest in its capabilities. It does everything you need to do except for, you know, high performance video work where you may require a MacBook Pro. But for those people who are casually working at home and doing video conferencing and surfing and email and writing, this is a really nice computer because now with the i5 and the i7 are quad core. Before the MacBook Air was a dual core machine, the i3 is still dual core. I don't recommend the i3 in a MacBook Air anyway.
Yeah.
And it has the new scissor action keyboard that the 16-inch MacBook Pro had. So it's done with Butterfly and it's quad core and its price has come down $100. The base price is $999. This is a very nice work at home computer. And so I wrote about Nali Patel's review, quoted from it, and had some additional remarks about my suggestion for a purchase option.
Excellent. Now, part of what I was curious about with the new MacBook Air was the keyboard. So I'm glad to hear that that keyboard is translated well to the 13-inch machine. I've typed a little bit on the 16-inch iteration of that, the first new, I guess, keyboard. And I've enjoyed it.
The new keyboard, same as the old keyboard?
It's not.
It's even better. I'm told it's even better.
Yeah, it feels nicer than the pre-Butterfly keyboard that we got.
Right.
I prefer it to what I have on my own MacBook, MacBook Pro.
Interesting. I've got one of the original, Bluetooth Mac keyboards and touchpads, battery-powered ones, and that served me pretty well.
It's
no longer the most beautiful keyboard. That one can get, but it serves me pretty well. Interesting. I wonder if they'll make that that scissor action available as an external keyboard. Because am I right? Does the Magic Keyboard have that, or is this even better than that now?
No, this Magic Keyboard is a standard same old scissor.
Right.
Yeah. It's another pre-Butterfly model. I would like definitely having typed on it just for a few minutes. On a 16-inch machine, that was my first thought, was I might actually consider an external keyboard iteration of this because it feels so much better. I've spent a lot of time typing on a Butterfly keyboard lately, and I really don't like it. So,
you know, Kelly, I accidentally swallowed some of the keys from my MacBook, and I had butterflies in my stomach.
John. Little joke, not that big. Yeah.
John.
Go ahead, smack me, Charlotte.
The world is a difficult place right now. We don't need that.
Yeah, we do. We need some humor.
I think we might need it more, actually, but that doesn't make it any better.
But do I need a MacBook Air? This is the question.
Everybody needs a MacBook Air as a backup machine.
A backup machine.
I mean, we have this question regularly because we talk about it all the time. And you, Charlotte, recently bought an iPad. You got an iPad Pro.
Yes, lovely iPad.
And
lovely.
Yeah. both shiny and pretty, I believe, much like your review.
But it's both, and it still is, even after a number of weeks of usage, of heavy usage. But no, it's interesting because we were discussing this. We may be able to come back to it later, you know, in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink.
Charlotte, isn't it true when you started with the Mac Observer, you had a Samsung phone and you had a Chromebook?
I have both those devices.
I've always had a Mac. Converted you.
Well, no, because I've always had, always had a, my main computer has always been a Mac.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For a long time, because that started when I required, when I was doing music, a lot of music stuff. And so it was basically impossible to do otherwise. And so I've always liked and used Apple laptops. I've used different products from different places. The Chromebook is still sat in another room in my apartment as a little streaming box. Works quite nicely for that. But I had either the first or second generation iPad back in the day as well, which I adored and still adore my latest version. The question is, would I want that as my daily driver? In the same, and that question I think applies to the MacBook Air as well.
Yeah.
And even with an external display, I'm not convinced the answer is yes.
For what you're doing, maybe not. But like we've said before, if your computing needs are pretty lightweight and it's a lot of web pages, maybe a little online banking, reading email, things like that, then absolutely, I think.
Skype.
Yeah.
But I think
Zoom. Zoom is a client. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a range of performance. Now, the customers should be aware that the MacBook Air 2020 starts at $999. Mm-hmm. That's with a dual core i3, 8 gigabytes of RAM, and a 256 SSD. That is bare bones minimum. If you're going to get a MacBook Air, I would strongly recommend upgrading to the 512 SSD and an i5. That'll put you at $1,299. Mm-hmm. And then for those people who are really serious about growth potential and a little nervous about 8 gigabytes, another $200 will get you to 16 gigabytes. That's $1,499. So there's a range of choices in there, $999, $1,299, and $1,499, depending on your finances and how much of a geek you are and how forward-looking you want to be in terms of RAM.
Sure.
So if I were going to buy one, I'd buy the $1,499 one because I'm done with 8 gigabytes of RAM.
Because you're John.
I'm done with 16 too, but I'm done with 8.
Okay. So I'm not going to go and have this conversation again with you because I know what the answer is. Because you and a couple of our other colleagues who will remain nameless are the same in this. What do you need 16 gigabytes of RAM for, John?
Breathing room.
You know, in case.
Especially for Safari.
Well, don't get me started on Safari because it sucks. And I've had this conversation with Kelly and Bob Levitis before. Please don't even talk to me about that. Fine. I'm not having this row. It's very nice. I would personally have zero use for it.
Sure.
Well, you've got a Mac Mini. You work at a desktop. You already got a home computer. You know, you're set. But
absolutely.
So how much would a Mac Mini cost with a decent 27-inch external display and 16 gigabytes of RAM? Are we looking at about the same price range, or are we talking about a few hundred dollars?
I'm not quite sure, because I bought 8 gigabytes with a good screen, and it cost less than an iMac at the time.
Hmm.
To be honest, I'm not sure it's entirely I don't think the whole debate around this actually is price, because there are lots of variations on a theme you can get for a very similar price.
Certainly.
I think the issue is here is, what are you actually needing a device for, and where are you going to use it? Mm-hmm. If I only needed one computer and I didn't have, you know, I had a kind of $1,500 budget maybe, would I get a MacBook Air? Yeah, and I needed to be out and about a lot. Yeah, I can see an argument for MacBook Air. I would always prefer a Pro, but I get why people would go for an Air if you don't need that kind of computing.
Well, the pandemic won't be with us forever, and having a portable computer, you know, mobility was king before this all started.
Yeah, I'm really pleased I bought an iPad and to be really mobile to work before I couldn't leave my flat. That was really good use of money.
Mm-hmm. You've published articles at Mac Observer using an iPad.
Multiple times, I think, and I'll be talking about more of this in the coming week or 2 weeks. I personally think that with iPad OS, it's really a fantastic, pretty powerful device for most things. I've tried a little bit of video editing on the iPad. You've only really got iMovie. It kind of does the job quickly. It's nowhere near as good as ScreenFlow or something which is what I use on my Mini. The sound quality, if you want to record video without an external mic on an iPad, is not great at all. Obviously, with a MacBook Air, you could plug something, you know, a decent USB mic into an Air.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can see the balance. I can see cases where, for some people, they would find a MacBook Air useful.
Sure.
I have one bitch. I have one complaint.
And that is putting my feet up. Proceed.
The difference between a casual home user and a pro user is in the power of the processor, the graphics, and the memory, and is not, in my mind, tied to the number of USB-C ports. Every MacBook should have 4. This business of restricting the MacBook Air to 2 ports is more leverage against the user, forcing them to make a decision, as opposed to cost or convenience. Every MacBook should have 4 ports.
We've had that conversation, and we will presumably have it again at some point in the future, because I disagree with you on that. And I'm not basing this on anything except what's that measurement. Oh, real life. So there's that.
John.
Yes.
It's called a dongle.
Yes, we will talk about that on a future show if you have opinions about this.
I literally would love to hear them. Explosion this side of the Atlantic.
Observations at macobserver.com. The other thing I wanted to talk about today is spend a little bit of time on, Charlotte, an interesting consideration that you wrote up for us.
Well, yeah, I think this is kind of pertinent to the conversation we were having before, actually, which is there is talk, and some people had been digging through patents and found there's a lot of work going towards potentially introducing Face ID to Macs, which is interesting to me. So it's slightly simpler, it appears, in a MacBook. No, sorry, it's more complicated in a MacBook. Because you basically need to fiddle things around. And that, you know, the dot projectors at one is in the keyboard, and then there's other bits at the top. So it's slightly more fiddly according to the patents.
Okay.
But I actually think that is a better use case. I can totally see why someone would want to open a MacBook of some description. I'm really doing the gesture here, and that's really useful for a podcast.
Yes,
but, but I can totally see why someone would want to open up their MacBook of some description, have the camera, look at their face, and open. As you know, I am a huge fan of Face ID.
Yes.
I think it's one of the most underrated products. I still think that on the features on the iPhone. I would love... So the thing I can't get my head around with this is, if you're using a desktop computer like me with an external camera on an external monitor, neither of which is made by Apple, how that would work.
Probably Apple would limit Face ID to the MacBooks.
Yeah. It would have to be a built-in camera. So like an iMac could do it.
They can control the hardware.
The patent does refer to an iMac.
Okay.
Those are the devices, the MacBook devices and the iMacs. Right. And I get that.
Yeah. Aside from that, I don't know that you could. So I think it would end up having similar limitations to Touch ID on the Touch Bar MacBooks now. So
yes, you see, I've never played with that feature. I don't know if people find that useful or doesn't work well enough, then it's just annoying.
I think it's tremendous. I adore it. I I have access to one with a touch bar and I love it. And part of the reason that I do like it is because, unlike my Face ID phone, I don't have to look at my computer in order to unlock it. I can just touch the touch ID corner and there it is, instead of just sort of point it in the vicinity of my face and have to look at it, because I still have the, you know, I have to pay attention turned on. So I know part of it's my own fault, but I really like the touch ID for unlocking. But if I were to take that MacBook Pro and run it closed but hooked up to an external monitor, I wouldn't have access to that. Just like I wouldn't have access to Face ID if I were to run it closed and hooked up to an external monitor. Sure. I wouldn't expect that my external keyboard would be able to do the touch ID that the laptop does now. So I think
it would be
similar. I think the interesting piece to me of that would be generally there's sort of two obstacles to that. And number one is I can turn on your camera from here, mwahaha, that makes everybody put a piece of tape over that camera.
Right.
So there's that. And then also the problem that some people have with Face ID on iPads, which is that's where your thumb goes. So when I open my computer, my thumb is probably over the camera. Whenever I open a MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, whatever, when I open an Apple laptop that, you know, the camera's in the middle, your thumb kind of goes in the middle to lift the hinge. And I think, you know, depending how responsive, depending how responsive that camera is, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, as I've been using the iPad, I've kind of been thinking, would I prefer it with Face ID? Do I like Touch ID? I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really like Face ID. I would love to know. I can see why it's a bit awkward with a bigger device to use Face ID in terms of an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of would like Face ID on the iPad, I think.
Yeah. I know a couple of people who have it. And it was a bit of an adjustment at first, because if you're going to hold it in landscape, then a lot of people like to hold it kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and that puts your thumb over the camera. Yeah, so there was a little bit of adjustment. Yeah. There's a little bit of adjustment
orientation
there
on the phone. So you naturally hold it upright. You only need one camera lens.
Well, you're holding it with one hand and you're holding it around the back. So it's rare for your thumb to be over the lens unless you're holding it upside down and trying to hit the home button, which I've done. But it was in my pocket and I wasn't looking. So
I can definitely see it working on, say, a MacBook Air, though.
Yeah.
The kind of device, you know, we're talking in the last little bit about the importance of portability, and having devices that can, you know, you can easily transfer around and move around. And mm-hmm. having Face ID, how nice would that be? You're in a meeting, you don't have to faff around with typing a password in. Open it up, your computer opens, on you go.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
I like the idea of it. Like, in practical terms, also, again, you know, you're holding your phone around the back, so, you know, by the time you get your monitor to some place where everything's woken up and everything, your thumb may be out of the way and it'd be fine. But definitely that piece of tape, I think, would hamper a lot of people in that case. Otherwise, it seems like an idea that would have a lot of appeal, especially like on an iMac, where there is no external keyboard and or built-in keyboard, so there's no mechanism for Apple to Touch ID that. You know, I definitely like the idea of smoother login options or unlock options. You know, if you are a person who has one of these as a work machine and every time you leave your computer, the screen goes dark and you have to enter your password to unlock it, it would be really nice if you could just sit down and do that. You know, similar to how with
if you combine that with
unlocking
Apple Watch,
with your watch.
Yeah, you just get into that. Yeah. First time you Face ID, snap it open, and then you close it up in closed lid mode, and then you need to log in again. After the screensaver kicks in, you just let your watch log you in.
Yeah, that would be cool. And I definitely like the idea of doing that. That would be pretty nifty. So definitely something to consider. We should, if you have opinions about that as well, we welcome your feedback at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. That's going to do it for us today. I want to thank both of you for being here. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye, John.
Bye, Charlotte.
John, thanks for being here as always.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will hopefully talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.